Mesmer is an entrepreneur. He's been on the Inc. 5000 numerous times. He is part of the Titan 100. He is an expert at identifying gaps in markets and disrupting industries. He is the CEO of RMG Erectors and Constructors. Welcome to the show, Bobby.
George, thanks for having me.
Excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Wow, that's a loaded question, right? You know, personal life, I don't know. I live a boring personal life, you know, if you ask me. You know, it's all based around work, right? That's what we do. So as an entrepreneur, you know, my life is really based around, you know, creating this empire that I've started to create 25 years ago and just kind of building upon that. And don't get me wrong, like I do take a lot of time for myself. You know, I have a very happily married wife to my wife, Sharon, and we have two boys and 17 and 20. And, you know, so we try to keep it exciting, but they know what they get out of me. You know, after all this time, they know that, you know, that work is work. And, you know, but I also make the time as needed and we go on vacation and stuff. But so, yeah, really boring personal life, you know, jump on the bike. I ride motorcycles. I collect classic cars and fly airplanes and do all that kind of stuff. And I actually got a little bit burnt this past weekend on my arms. I was down on the bike down in Tennessee and taking a nice little cruise. So that was nice. So that's where I get my relaxing time in, you know.
Nice.
As far as business, RMG Erectors, been in business for 25 years. Have grown the company to be the largest pre-engineered specialty erection firm in the entire world. We're the only company in our market segment that is doing engineering, detailing, fabrication, erection, all of that in-house. That's controlling 100% of that in-house. And so that's a... you know, so that's a big thing. You know, we vertically integrated our company and we're continuing that integration to be more, to continue to grow that and to take on more market control. You know, we're in tune to be $1 billion company in the next couple of years, and we'll be the first $1 billion erection firm that ever existed, in the United States and in North America.
And why do you do all that?
Why? It's when you start a business, you start it for selfish reasons, right? I think everybody does. I think everybody, you know, puts yourself in a position. It's like, you know, I want to make more money and I want to do it. And so there's no virtuous nature to starting a business. You know, you don't go into it with wanting to help people and all that. It takes time to get to that point. And I've made that shift. You know, I've been in business for so long and I've gotten past the point of like wanting to do it for myself, where now it's legacy. It's, you know, I want to build the legacy. Some magazine articles and all have recently compared me to, the modern day Carnegie, you know, where we're going as a business. And it's a hell of an honor. And so that's a legacy, right? That's a legacy that we're trying to create. That's a legacy that we're trying to put in place. And then we're trying to help people, you know, employ more people, you know, be more active, you know, and, be more active in our, in what we're doing as a business and in our communities, be more active in our employment and, hiring people, you know, get more, you know, and take care of our employees better, you know, take a lot of pride in the way that we hire our employees. You know, we take a lot of pride in the fact that we pay all of our employees more than even the national average in our industry. So that's a big thing. And, you know, so that's what we're doing it for. You know, we want to leave a fingerprint, like after I'm done and I sell and, or I expire, you know, my life expires here at some point, you know, I want people to look back and be like, you know what, you know, they really did something. They really changed the mold. And it takes that time, you know, until I retire or until I'm not doing it anymore. That's when people start to pay attention, right? When you think about the Vanderbilts, the Carnegies and all that, while they were doing it, they were enemies of the state. They were enemies of the people. People hated them because they had so much money, this and that. After they left is when people created value in what they did, because then there was an appreciation because they weren't there to do it anymore. And so that's what we want to leave. I want to leave that legacy there where people, they're not appreciating me today, possibly, but they will appreciate me, when I'm done and gone.
So thank you for all that, and congratulations on the success. Certainly, you go from, like, I appreciate many people, myself included, when you want to start a business because you don't want a job. You need to earn money. You want freedom and flexibility and all that stuff. When does the shift happen where you realize, oh, I've reached critical mass and now it's about more than just me?
I would say that it's different for everybody. I think the commonality of that question comes into when people hit a milestone where their finances are more like sustained, right? Everybody works all the time, and you're working, whether you're collecting a paycheck or you're in business. When you're in business, you're still collecting a paycheck. You're still working for somebody. You're still doing something for somebody, right? You all have people to answer to. And at the end of the day, like, when you start a business, it's, you're trying to hit milestones. So like, oh, I want to hit my first million. I want to hit my first 5 million, my first 10 million. And when you start to really make money, And you have money left over at the end of the year, but you're content in yourself, and that contentment you find, like, well, I don't really need anything anymore. So what should I do here? I have resources now. What should I do? Because So that's where the shift happens, because you start looking at how you can help other people. And some people make the mistake too. They look outside of their organization and they help outside first. I like to look inside of the organization. The people that have helped get us to where we are, I feel like it's very important. Look there first before you look outside. Take care of the people that are taking care of you every day. They're very important to you. You can say it, but words without action means nothing. And so, so you have to be able to, look inside first, which is what we do. And we try to, take care of our family as a company first and all the people here. And then we go outside and say, okay, what can we do, outside of that? So it's just that, I think it's that shift in that time of being content and finding contentment in yourself. And you're never content when you're growing the business, but you find contentment in the money aspect of it. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm blessed. I have an overabundance. And what can I do? What more can I do to help less people and to give them the blessings that I'm getting?
It sounds so obvious when you say that. And I'm thinking, well, that's something we should all do as individuals, is let's look inside of ourselves before we start trying to fix the rest of the world. And it's true for organizations. I think it's true for governments and everything else. So was that you found the contentment, you found security, and then you realize, well, I need to just make sure that everybody that's part of our family is also getting everything that they want out of this. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, not everybody thinks that way. Everybody wants to keep it for themselves. But if I have what I want, I can't spend what I have. And again, it goes back to the other side too. Like, nobody wants to pay taxes and all that too. So it's like, so you're like, look, if I can help somebody, And then in turn, that's helping me, because that's what it is. There is no selfishness in helping. A lot of people misconstrued that. No, there's no selfishness there. Like, you have to be like, and what I mean by that is, you have, like, help is selfish. You know what I mean? Like, you're there's always your reason why you're helping somebody, right? And as well as it should be, that's okay. And, it's just to look at it and say, like, I can't spend what I have. So why should I give it to, say, per se, the government, right? And let them go waste my money when I can give it to somebody who can really use it and utilize it. And hopefully that, like I said, that gives them the opportunity to extend their life or make different decisions or have, you never know what somebody's going through. Maybe it just catapults them into something that like just changes their whole world. And that's, you know, whether I know that or not, but that's a blessing that out that'll come back around to me, you know, through that support.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
So you mentioned that you're paying at the top, if not much higher than other companies in your industry, and you are on track to be a billion-dollar company and far and away the largest in the space that y'all occupy. So you are rewarding your people financially. How else are you thinking about that? Is it one off? Like, well, how can you help? Is it training? Is it kind of tell me about how you're creating this great culture.
Yeah, it's all of that. I think it's all the steps that you do as a business owner, right? You're obligated as a business owner, and you're charged with making the right decisions every day. And that's not just for yourself. I work for the company just like everybody else does. The company is its own living, breathing thing, and that's how you have to treat it. And so for me, I'd like to lead by example. So get into it with the people, know what their jobs are, have an understanding of it so I can, so when I go to them and I talk to them, I can advise them in the best way possible. So they're, you know, through the understanding of what their actual specific job is. Doesn't matter who it is in the organization. It could be the guys in the field who are just starting and carrying certain material, to the guys that are setting up rigging stations. Like, you know, you've got to know the work. And when you're out there, they respect the leader. They're going to follow the leader and respect him more when he knows what he's doing and he's taking the time or the minute to say, hey, maybe instead of this, try it like this. You know, and understanding that. And then it goes, you know, again, the just the having an understanding with your people, being available to them. A lot of business leaders try not to make themselves available to the people around them or the people within the organization. And I think that's a huge mistake. You know, when I we have multiple offices. We have three in the US, one in Costa Rica. So we have four offices, you know, all together. And you know, every time I go to those offices, I make time for everybody there. You know, like I literally this morning was my first was the first day this week in the New Jersey office, which is where I'm at now. And the first thing I do, you know, walk around with my cup of coffee and go see everybody in this office. Literally everybody. Stop and see everybody. How you doing? How was your weekend? What's going on? And big question, what do you need from me? You know, what is it that you need from me? Do you know, what can I help you with today? And that goes a long way. Most of the time, they're going to say nothing. But the goal is that they have comfort in knowing that I'm there for them. I'm not just sitting here, coming, sitting in my office and saying, you know, don't bother me. I'm the boss, and you know what you got to do. Like, that's just the wrong way. So that breeds the culture. Everybody knows open door policy. Everybody knows that you're accessible and that you're here to help and you're here to give advice. And then just like things that I feel like get lax and, you know, like company happy hours, company parties, like, you know, like this Thursday, like we shut down for the holiday Friday and Monday, the Memorial Day weekend coming up. And, you know, but Thursday afternoon, we're shutting down, I think at like 2 o'clock, you know, here in the New Jersey office, and they're having a happy hour and barbecue. So we're cooking out and, you know, like, and that's just camaraderie. Everybody just gets to hang out, have a few drinks, eat some hot dogs and hamburgers and just have a good time with each other. And again, that breeds a culture with people where they're just, it's different. You know, not a lot of companies do that because I don't want to be liable for it, or it just creates the wrong impression. What wrong impression can you create by having eaten a hamburger and having a beer with one of your coworkers? I just don't understand that, you know? So I think it's all of those things together And then, and the last thing part of that is what I call the we factor. You know, it's, this is us, you know? So when I speak a lot, I talk a lot about we, who we are, you know, and when I even speak to people, I talk in kind of like the third person a little bit, you know, well, we decided to do this. Well, we decided, because it's us as a team. It's not just me. Yeah. It's my name on the door. Yeah. The buck ends with me, but we're all part of getting it done. So like it's the we factor, and people engage in that because now they feel like you're part of it, and people want to be held accountable. And so part of that, I'm able to hold them accountable, but they love to be held accountable. People inherently want to be held accountable in what they're doing to feel like they're part of that team.
Well, I certainly love that. And it doesn't happen on accident that if you just randomly started walking around and talking to people that you'd never talked to before, and be like, hey, how can I help? Be like, what in the world is going on here? Am I about to be fired? But you fostered in a culture where that's just what you do and you want to know. And so when people have something on their mind, they're comfortable actually saying it to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and I think that's important for anybody. I think every leader needs to do that. I think they're very disconnected, and I see it in, I do a lot of business coaching, a lot of CEO coaching and mentoring, and I see it in businesses that are small up to Fortune 500 companies. And the CEOs that I've coached are so disconnected, and they can't figure out, like, well, I have this operational issue. And I'm like, well, do you know what's going on there? Well, no, but that's why I have Jerry. And I'm like, yeah, but if you don't know, how does he know, like, what, like, how are you guiding him through expectation? How does he know what your vision is if you're not guiding him of what you believe and where he should be going? And they're so disconnected. I'm like, okay, so do you know what Jerry does every day? And they're like, no. And I'm like, like, this guy, and I'm going to tell you, like, Jerry looks at you and laughs at you. Like, I literally tell CEOs that. I'm like, he looks at you and laughs at you when you come to him and you want to try to conduct him, because he knows that you have no idea what you're doing. And what he's doing. So he's like, what, you want to tell me what to do? You've never done my job. That's the disconnection. And I feel like that's where all these companies have a major problem, you know, as they continue to grow and as they continue to move on, like, you know, all the hiccups you see in all these companies that they're having problems, it's because, you know, they're hiring paper CEOs, they're hiring, you know, middle management VPs and executives who are managing the people that are getting it done, but they didn't work their way up through the company. And so the people who are actually getting it done in the grind have zero respect for the upper level, you know, and that's where that huge disconnect comes in.
Yeah, that's probably not going to be a thriving organization, is it?
No. But some of these companies, they get so big, they just can't help it. Like, right, like Coca-Cola, right? Like, I like to pick on Coca-Cola because they've been around the test of time. But their CEOs are idiots, you know what I mean? And they have no idea what's going on through the course of their entire company. They think that they do, but they don't. They're just paper CEOs. They're just like, hey, who's the most qualified person that the board loves that we can put in this place and pay $20 million a year for the next 2 years or 3 years to make us look good, as opposed to, hey, what can we do to build the company culture? And a company like Coca-Cola, they're a multi-billion dollar a year company. You can't kill them. They have so much minutia. It doesn't matter. You see what I mean? But I can you bet your ass if everybody stopped drinking Coke because of some issue, they're going to start thinking about, wow, what do we got to do now? And you're seeing it in certain companies right now. There's a lot of companies that are having real big issues because they got the wrong CEOs, the wrong leaders in place. You know, Family Dollar. I mean, Family Dollar just hired a brand new CEO. They've had their slew of issues. But again, they hired a high profile CEO. Like, is he going to do a good job or not? I don't know. But did he come up in the company? No. Does he know the culture? No. He's going to act like he does, but there's a disconnect that's going to be there. And I still think they're going to have a problem.
I love everything about that. I don't love that Family Dollar is doing a bad job. I don't love that Coca-Cola has a BS CEO. But it certainly makes all the sense in the world when we're so disconnected from the actual work and from the point of the whole thing. Why would a CEO be effective if they're so far removed, or we're never there in the first place?
I don't understand it, but again, it goes to show the companies that are more involved in shareholder stake than they are in culture stake, you
Yeah.
know, and that's what it is about. It just shifts to be about money anymore. And that's the problem. And I just think that it needs to change. Culture is a huge thing in any company. I don't care if you have 5 employees or 5,000 employees. If you don't have the buy-in from the people and they're loving what they're doing every day, you know, then you have a problem, no matter what.
Can you unring that bell if you catch yourself and realize, oh, I've done such a good job growing this company, but I feel pretty disconnected from the folks because we've got 10 offices or 20 offices, or how can you sort of put the toothpaste back in the tube if that's possible?
Yeah, I think it's a 50-50 shot, you know? I think you're playing roulette in that case. I think if the leader who created the business and who grew the company, if he's still there, and a lot of his people who grew with him are still there, and the disconnection has happened, I feel like you can mend that and bring it back because they know who that person is. And there's still a level of, well, he did start this business. You know, he did start this and bring it up to where we are. I think if you're a company who's got shareholders and you're the second CEO that they've hired in the last 8 years or whatever, no. I think you're the only way to bring it back is to put somebody in place from within the organization who's been there for 20 years, and then let that person bring the culture back. You'll never get it back with somebody else at the helm who wasn't there from the beginning. And I think you can try, but it's never going to happen. Never.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So, do you have a sense of when you're going to be done? Do you think about that?
If ask my wife that question, she wants me done tomorrow.
How's 3 o'clock today, Bobby?
Exactly. I always said when I'm 55, you know, so I'm 49 this year, and so I got 6 years left, and so 55, I want to sell this. So we're already moving that in process. Now, does that mean I'm done? I don't know that that means I'm done. I think, you know, I mean, the company of this size and what I'm doing and the caliber, they're probably going to want to hold me in. It's going to be a large venture capital group that's going to buy me, which again, I'm welcoming offers now for everybody who's listening out there. But it's going to be a large capital group that's going to want to buy me, and I think they're going to try to hold me on, which is probably not a bad idea for a couple years and give me something to do. But I'm already lining up my retirement plan, because at 55, it's like, what am I going to do retired at 55? Like, I don't play golf. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I, you know, you can only do so much, right? So I think what I'm doing, well, I know what I'm doing is I'm already out there on the public speaking. So I'm a professional speaker. I'm doing a lot more stuff like this, like with you, with podcasts, and a lot of information from business and success and failure, and where I'm currently in the process of getting started writing a book, and then I'm doing a lot more mentoring and business coaching, CEO coaching, and operational assistance. You know, I'm an operational expert, so I can come into companies, look at them, and say, you know, they're trying to get over a hump, or they're having issues, or bleeding out money. I can come in and with a new set of eyes and look at it and kind of say, you want a path. And so that's going to be my retirement game, which I think is a great game for me. I think, you know, I'm finding success in it now, and as I move forward, I'm going to continue to find good success in that, because people want to hear what I have to say, and they love the fact that, like, I don't just talk about my successes. Like, I'm a big person about failure. You know, I love the failure routine, and because I feel like it's so important to growth in every aspect of your life, personally, professionally, and so for me, I focus on the failures where everybody else wants to, like, kind of shove them under the rug a little bit. And people kind of relate to that. You know, they want to know, like, because, you know, I think people are getting sick and tired of the social media and stuff like that, where everybody's like, well, I made $1 million this year and I did this and I did that. Well, now they're starting to see that it's all bullshit. Nobody really makes that kind of money. They're just putting it out there, and, you know, they're living, you know, like, so I think people want the realness within somebody to come out and be like, yeah, listen, you know, I've, I, yeah, here's where I'm at today, but you know, 10 years ago, I took a major hit. Bet you didn't know that. You know, 4 years ago, I had a heart attack and a stroke. Last year, I had another brain stroke. Like, you know, like, but here I am. I'm still going. So guess what? If I can, you can. And people want that. People relate to that.
No doubt about it. Well, you've got an incredible story. I appreciate everything that you've done and look forward to keeping tabs on you and see what you're going to do. So thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? What's the best way to engage?
Yeah, thanks for having me, George. People can follow me on LinkedIn, Bobby Mesmer on LinkedIn, Bobby Mesmer on TikTok, and Bobby Mesmer on Instagram. That's the best place. And you'll see the day in the life of me every single day.
Love it. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Bobby your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. You can find Bobby on LinkedIn, TikTok, and Instagram, and I will link all of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Bobby.
Thanks, George. Appreciate it.
Till next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.